If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Right in today's episode, we answered live callers' questions, but that was after the intro portion. Today it was 52 minutes long. That's where we talk about current events, fitness, family life, and much more. By the way, you can check the show notes for timestamps if you just want to skip around your favorite parts. Also, if you want to be on an episode like this one, email us at live@mindpumpmedia.com. Now, we are having a live event in Las Vegas. I want to mention this one more time. June 15th, you can sign up, come see us, come meet us. It'll be a lot of fun. It's mindpumplive.com. Now, this episode is brought to you by one of our sponsors, The John Deloney Show, one of the best podcasts you'll find anywhere. In today's episode, we talk about an interesting episode that we listened to. You can check him out and more at johndeloney.com/mindpump. That's johndeloney.com/mindpump. Also, these are the final hours for the April sale. This is Maps Anywhere and Maps Hit. Both are half off. If you're catching this podcast when it drops, you still have time to get that 50% off sale. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code April50 for the discount. All right, here comes the show.
T-shirt time!
And it's T-shirt time.
Ah, shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
We have four winners this week, two for Apple Podcasts, two for Facebook. The Apple Podcast winners are Shirley McMuffin and Is This the Krusty Krab? And for Facebook, we have Cody Hain and Mary Jane Lee Daly. All four of you are winners. Send a name I just read to itunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
One of the common rules in strength training is to do compound lifts before isolation lifts. However, this is not true when you're trying to hit a body part that's not responding. Sometimes it's better to do an isolation lift first. This helps you connect to the target muscle. Then when you do the compound lift, you can adjust your technique to make it focus more on the body part that won't develop. So rules are important in strength training, but sometimes it's important to break those rules.
I'm glad you've done this one. We haven't talked about this in a while. And that's actually a tip that if I look back at my clientele, I probably use that more than I use the rule of, you know, start with a compound lift or start with whatever muscle group we're focused on. Because I felt like most all my clients struggled with feeling it in a muscle in one way or another.
It was a common one.
Yeah. Like rarely ever did I get my clients to feel, or like when they first started, be able to feel squats in their glutes or chest. Like chest was a really common one. They have a really hard time bench pressing and feeling their chest. So I find I use this technique a lot more often than not, even though we communicate the importance of compound lifts first and the benefits of that. You would find me probably doing isolation exercises with a client first for this exact reason.
I learned this as a kid. I was following Mike Mentzer's Heavy Duty. This is not off topic. There's actually the way he prescribes certain workouts, because the whole philosophy around Heavy Duty, I'm not advocating for it, but the whole philosophy was they did one all out set to failure and that was enough to stimulate muscle growth. But then the challenge that he would talk about was, well, how do you fully stimulate a muscle with a compound lift? Like doing pull-ups, won't the biceps fatigue more than the lats? So his theory was pre-exhaust the lats before doing your pull-up. So you do a pull-over and then you would end up doing pull-ups. So that was the theory. Now we don't need to necessarily talk about that. But what I noticed as a kid was, it was the first time I got a pump in my lats ever, because I did pull-overs before doing pull-ups. So I understood it then. And so with my clients, whenever we do an exercise, and they'd be like, I don't feel that in my butt, or I don't feel that in my quads, or I don't feel that whatever, I would always have them do a light isolation exercise for that body part. Now, the data doesn't show necessarily that you activate more muscle fibers or it's going to, you know, necessarily target the muscle more. And that's because the data isn't working with coaches and trainers who use that ability that they now feel that muscle to change your technique and form. That's the key. The key isn't that there's some magic in isolating the muscle first. That's not the magic. The magic is now that you feel your butt and you can feel what it feels like and you got a little bit of a burn, a pump there. Now when you do your squats, move change your technique, change your form so you feel it in your butt. So you have that external, you know, feeling.
You're more conscious
there it is.
Of it.
That's
You're
it.
More connected
that's right.
to it. And I think that's it's an overlooked aspect of training.
Yeah.
That I think that's why a lot of time was spent, especially with newer clients coming in, where you really have to devote a lot of time and attention to being able to the recruitment process, but also be able to feel these muscles respond, because that's beneficial for you getting further along the process into the compound lifts. I think that even you can make an argument that that's probably more valuable of an approach if you're looking at a single joint approach of being able to kind of understand your body, be able to control your body, be able to slowly load your body, even like going through like body weight and then start loading and making sure you have control and access to these muscles when you need them.
So there was an evolution to that for me. I think originally it started with I'd normally choose like two, you know, body weight or isolation exercises that were simple, two sets, 15 reps, real light. You know, you're not trying to fatigue the muscle at all. You just want to get them connected. Later on, that evolved to more like 5 to 10 reps tops, two sets, and an isometric hold.
Yep.
So I like that combined with the isolation.
I've done both. I like it.
Yeah. So if we're doing like, say, for example, my client can't feel it in their glutes when they do squats. And so instead of doing 15 reps for two sets, 15 reps of floor bridges, I might only do 5 reps.
But it's a hard squeeze.
It's a hard squeeze at the top. Yes. So I do an isometric hold at the top, where they would contract the glutes. I'd be talking to them, hold it there, squeeze the butt. Can you feel it? Getting them to really concentrate on connecting to that muscle. And I do two sets like that versus just kind of going through the repetitions.
No, you're right. The squeeze is the most important part of that. That's exactly what I found. By the way, for coaches and trainers, this really isn't different than the following cue when you're training someone. You know this as a coach. You're telling someone to concentrate on this muscle, and then they can't. And then what do? You go over and you say, you know, can I touch it so you can feel it? And they go, sure. And then you just put your finger on it. I want you to squeeze this right here.
Yeah.
That external, you know, signal, that finger on my rhomboid or my lats or on my quad or whatever. Now I know where I need to feel it. That's essentially what you're doing with these isolation lifts before compound. It's not pre-exhaust necessarily. It's not that you're hitting more muscle fibers. It's that it allows you to adjust your form and technique, or even just the feel, because you can actually see an exercise look almost identical. And to the untrained eye, they will look identical, you know, two different sets. But on one of them, more emphasis is on the lats, let's say. And on the other one, more emphasis is on, let's say, the rhomboids or the biceps, right? So getting that muscle to contract and squeeze, and then, oh, that's what that feels like. Now when I do this exercise, oh, let me move my position. And I noticed this with... Use glutes is a great example. I would see my clients squat change. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, I don't feel this on my butt. So we would do some, you know, bridges, squeeze at the top real hard, get them to feel it. And then I'd say, okay, now when you squat, try and feel it in that area. And then you'd see them all of a sudden engage more glutes with just slight changes.
Yeah. And a lot of times you find it's the common postural positions that they're holding throughout the day or through all these years of how they've lifted things. And built and established these hardwired patterns. Like it takes work to, you know, deconstruct that, to be able to get you to set yourself in good postural position first in order to contract the muscles to their full potential. And so, you know, that's all part of the training process too, that gets, you know, jumped right past into trying to work on your aesthetic goals and all these other things.
Now, I learned this just through trial and error and training so many clients, right? You alluded to the research or the studies and data around it is kind of weak. Is that because we use like muscle activation as like the primary?
You're looking at muscle activation, muscle fiber recruitment. I don't know of any studies that look at muscle development or anything like that. But with researchers, what researchers do is they say, do this exercise first, this exercise second. And then they'll say, okay, now this group switch the order. And then they do the you know, they'll test the muscle. They'll use MRI or something like that to see what's going on. That's not how this works.
Right.
The way this works is your form and technique will adjust now that you know where you're supposed to feel it. But if you just go from one to the other and you don't concentrate on what you're
There's
no coaching.
That's why I think
it doesn't make a difference.
That's why I think over time I piece together the isometric hold.
Yes.
Because even if I just told a client
just to rep it
yeah,
out.
Like, yeah, like so I could, what would happen, I would prescribe this to a client to do before and I, you know, and they wouldn't be with me. And I'd be like, yeah, Adam's still having a hard time filling it. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, today we'll do it together. I'll see how it's going. And then they'd be doing it and I'm watching them just go through the motion. I'm like, oh God, it's all hip flexor. They're not even activating the glute still. So they're doing a floor bridge, which is primarily glute, but somehow they're managing to swing it up there with their hip flexors and they're not concentrating on it. And that's where, you know, the evolution of, okay, wait, hold at the top. Mm-hmm. Now squeeze. Now flex, squeeze your butt. And then they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, I feel that. Okay,
they're now come down. They're not even achieving full extension a lot of times.
Yes, yeah, they completely weren't. And so that the coaching to the squeeze, the hold, that's where you're supposed to feel it, then going into the squat. And sometimes, so that was the typical prescription, sometimes I had to interrupt even the barbell squat sets of like, do another one of those. Like,
yes.
They'd go do it, and they'd be like, still having our time. Okay, wait, get back down.
Totally.
And we'd have to keep—
I'm glad you said that,
100%. Kind of practicing—
In between sets.
In between sets to get them to really start to get that connection, and then like, and then over time it'd be like, oh, okay, I get it. So that's probably why some of these studies are flawed in that area too. It's just like, it's not that simple. You can't just take a group of people that are relatively untrained or don't understand how to connect there and go, oh, do this exercise, and see if it makes a difference.
Your body intent
matters so much.
Yeah, and compound lifts involve more muscles in isolation, and your body will move in the way that it feels most comfortable or it feels strongest. So if that means it's not engaging the muscle that you want to engage, then that's the way it's going to move unless you change the technique and form and really emphasize on the change of the technique and form. Have you guys ever seen like arm wrestlers and how they do pull-ups? You ever watch arm wrestlers do pull-ups?
Probably like a bicep curl.
Very different. In tight, like this, yeah. It looks very different than like when a bodybuilder does a pull-up. You could tell bicep in, you know, forearm versus back, which is just the emphasis. I'm using that extreme because it's such an extreme difference. But that's what happens when you do these compound lifts is you have, you know, you do a squat. There's a lot of muscles involved, but your prime movers are your hamstrings, your quads, your glutes. Well, I mean, the percentage of the quads doing the lift can change dramatically depending on what your body feels comfortable with and what you're focusing on. And you can change that focus by changing the technique and being aware. And oftentimes you have to go lighter in order to do it.
You had to order the hardest muscles for clients to connect to, I mean, I think they're all going to, well, that's not
for
true.
All, for clients?
Yeah, yeah. What
glutes
order?
And chest.
Back.
Lats. Yeah, yeah.
Back, lats, yeah.
But I still would go, I would go.
Because back, I had to like put people in, I'd like, so I feel move like them into position.
Glutes, lats, chest maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's close because I did have.
It's all those big movers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chest is one of the hardest ones.
Yeah, you're right. Because
I mean.
It's all it arms, they'll feel.
Yeah.
And shoulder, yeah, arms and shoulders, and they roll forward every single time. And the flat, and that's why I moved away from the flat bench as far
way
as
more technical.
Yeah. It was so much easier to get a client in a more advantageous position in the incline because it naturally kind of sags the shoulders down and back.
Puts them in the position.
Versus them being flat and then kind of pushing their shoulders forward. Then they end up pushing all their shoulders and chest. That was probably one of the hardest.
Totally, totally. Dude, I was listening to Dr. John Deloney's podcast.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, I'm sure people know, great podcast, one of the most downloaded podcasts that exists. And callers call in and he helps them, right? He takes them through their challenges. But I listened to the most recent episode. I think the title of it is She Wants Sex More Than I Do. That's the title of it. Okay.
She does.
So this guy calls in and he sounds like a young guy or whatever. And he's like, man, you know, I just got married 2 months ago and you know, I feel like something's wrong with me. My wife wants more sex than I do. And I just don't, you know, whatever. And so of course, you know, Dr. Deloney's like, listen, nothing's wrong with you. You're not broken. Cause you can tell this guy's kind of ashamed. Right. So I'm listening. I'm like, man, what's going on? Poor guy. Right. So, you know, John goes, well, give me some context. Like, what do you mean by she wants more sex or whatever? He's like, well, you know, she'd be okay with like 2 times a day. And I'm like, bro, you're fine, dude. You're fine, bro. She wants a lot of sex. You're doing all right, dude. Poor guy. You know what I mean? I hear the guy's like, he's all pain. Like, what's wrong with
him? I mean, isn't this way? It's yeah, there's always going to be one person in every relationship, yes. Right? Do you ever feel like it's, I don't think it's ever,
no.
Like there's always going to be one person who feels like they want more and then the person left. And then I also
and
think
there's seasons.
Yeah. As I say, in our relationship, that's flip-flop for Katrina and I. So it was,
same.
It was her first and then it was me. And so it's like we flip-flop. It just kind of depends on the season, what's going on. Yeah. But I do remember being that way early on, being like, man, I just can't keep up. Like she's the amount she wants. And then that flipped to the other side. And I know that normally is the opposite though, right? Because most guys deal with like, they want it like crazy. Then the wife has a baby and then it normally changes a lot of times for.
Well, I know, typically you'll hear women or people say after they have kids, they don't want to have as much sex, especially moms will say that.
Yeah. I feel like there's two extremes or there's two groups there though. There's then the other group that said like, oh my God, because that kicked up Katrina's. Was after,
I think she's the minority.
I think so too. Cause I think most, what was your experience like with that, Justin?
Yeah. Cause for me going in, it was the opposite. I was like, no, I don't know. Cause I was all like the shame and stuff like that. Like I was very much still kind of under my parents' roof, you know, at the time. Like I just come back
that makes sex a lot
from
awkward.
College. And I'm like, I don't know. Like we gotta be sneaky. And you know, like, I
was how like, long were you guys there? How long were you guys there for?
So I had to live like under her parents' house for like a year.
Wow.
Well, actually a little bit less than a year, but still.
Dude, like I don't think I've ever had sex with my girl, my parents' house or her parents' house.
Really?
I don't think I could.
Wow. I don't suggest it.
You remember I was out by 17 years old into my own place. So I've never.
All right.
I don't even know what that's like to have sex in my parents' house. So especially being a grown ass man, come back, you know, maybe we're visiting.
Yeah.
It don't feel right.
There's not much will stop me. It was really. You know what I mean?
Oh, I still, yeah. But yeah, it was funny because it was like, it definitely shifted once, you know, the kid, it was the pregnancy thing. And I think it's because the hormone shift for her was like dramatic.
Sure.
And so it was like, It just completely turned the dynamic on its head. And then for me, it was like, well, whoa. You know, the lack of it got my increase, like, and it just kept compiling, you know? And so it's like, it's just, it's something we're working on all the time where it's kind of back and forth, but it's, you know, it's just a constant communication thing. You got to make sure that like, hey, here's my needs or here's what I'm feeling today. Here's what your needs. Here's what you want to see out of this.
Did it help when you were wearing like the Nacho Libre outfit and stuff like that?
I told you guys the tool belt and the fixing. I would do anything. Like I was out there like turning a wrench.
He's
like,
at work. He's breaking shit. Breaking
stuff, trimming trees, dude. You know, sawing stuff. Like even if I didn't have to work on something, I'm just sawing things outside. Hey, honey.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I just felt bad for the guy because you're hearing and you're like, you kind of feel bad for him, you know, and they just got married. Like, oh man.
I don't think so. I think it's the opposite. I don't think anyone feels bad for him. Every dude who's not getting sex is mad at
him.
Well,
no, I felt bad for him. I felt bad for him because
I want to virtually slap him.
You can hear that he thought like something's wrong with him. Yeah. Like he's like, oh man, I can't. Like, what's wrong with me? Is something wrong with me? And then he says she wants it twice a day. I'm like, bro.
Well, in regards to John, one of the things I love about John Deloney is he's such a great communicator. And boy, does that guy get hit with random.
The hardest questions I've ever heard.
Yeah. I think people might think like some of the stuff that we get live callers because we get curveballs and stuff like that, but that's easy. He gets really random shit. And then to be able to not only help somebody through that, but then also be sensitive enough to like, okay, I got to be careful, like how I say this. Yeah. You hear him in that episode kind of like trying to articulate like what he's trying to communicate to the guy.
Yeah, he's not like belittling his qualm or anything. He's like, you know, acknowledging it. Like for me, I'd be like,
I pick up on stuff when I listen to him communicate. He's a really good communicator. He really is. Like he does a really good job of.
You can tell he's been doing it for a while.
Yeah, getting across like really hard conversations, being very empathetic, but then also direct at the same time. Like there's a real art.
You know, I wonder. Of course, it's like this, right? Like we will have live callers call in, and it was like when we train clients. Like I'll hear three or four sentences, and I already have probably 85% guess on what the issue is because of the experience that I've had working with people. And you guys are the same way. So John's got to be like that, right?
Yeah, but you know what we have that's not fair that he doesn't have is that I have you guys, and this happened today's live caller.
Oh, that
like,
there's three of us?
I can jump to a conclusion and be like, ah, blah, 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 this is what I think. And even if I'm like, I'm right 8 out of 10 times for that person, I still have you guys to go like, well, it could also be this. Sure. And then between all three of us,
builds a better model for them to consider.
Yeah, we're gonna nail it, or one of us is gonna hit home with that person. Yeah. Where John is like all by himself; he doesn't have two other professionals that I can lean on. Okay, I might guess wrong.
But
on
I mean,
this.
You can just hear when people who have a lot of experience communicate that they know where to go or what's happening, or because oftentimes I'll hear like stuff he'll say, and I'll want to say something else, and then I'll hear him respond. And he's on point. It's like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about.
You know, I think that's the biggest secret sauce to being like a really good trainer is one, it just takes time to have that kind of experience to where you've seen enough of these like examples of it
becomes
okay,
a bit predictive.
And then you have the ability to communicate that before it happens for a person.
That's right.
Cause that like, cause when you first get a client and they're just starting off with you, like there's this, like, you're just building a relationship. They barely know who you are. Maybe you got referred. Oh, he's a really good trainer. You get the client buys 10 or 20 sessions from you. Yeah. And you're like, I got 20 hours to like win this person over that I could fundamentally help them or change their life or whatever it may be. And part of what would solidify that for me is the ability to read like what their challenges are or forecast what I knew was coming based off of like their previous patterns,
that builds
behaviors.
Trust, doesn't it?
Oh man. And if you could lay that out for them and then it unfolds that way, it's like, okay, I trust this.
Yeah.
This
you know, I'm looking, talking about this, I'm thinking about the live event we have coming up because, you know, we do callers, live callers does this a little bit. I'm so glad we started doing that a while ago because I was feeling so disconnected from like actually working and training people. Because, you know, people write in questions and we answer the question. I don't have the ability to, when it's a written question, I don't have the ability to ask more questions. Right. I don't have the ability to dig a little deeper and kind of see what's going on. I just have to answer the question based off of just, you know, whatever they wrote. When you answer questions with a live person, you can get a little deeper and seeing people in person. That's why these live events are so great, right? Because almost all these live events that we've done, and we haven't done them in a while, but when we do them, we meet with people. Inevitably, they'll come up, talk about how they like the show, and then we'll have a question.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I remember, this is such a great, it's so stimulating.
Well,
it's
and also, time. Don't you also feel like, I mean, that's a hard thing for somebody to be vulnerable over text message or be vulnerable, like really like,
yeah.
Like in person, there's that yes. other sense that like, you know, I'm here and like, I'm confiding in you and it's like just your thing you guys are talking about yep. at that point. And so, you know, for people to call in even here and ask us questions and then us go back and forth, it's close, but yeah. like in person, you get on a whole other level.
It's yeah. huge. It's you don't get the like comparing it again to the like written in questions. Like you can ask a very direct question that maybe there's an answer to that, but that the answer can completely change based off of more information.
100%.
So I mean, you get to see that in the live callers. You get to see where you're going to hear us give contradicting advice, right? Like if someone just asked the question without us knowing more about you, this might be the answer. But then we start digging deeper and we find out this.
Sometimes like, the answer is the opposite.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's why it's like, which also too, this is also the thing that irritates me about social media and the fitness space is like, it's there. Context matters so much because there's so many variables, especially when you start to insert, you know, behavioral psychology in addition to the nutrition and physiology and everything like that. It's like, man, sometimes you're going to lean so heavily in one direction, even if it contradicts what the science might say in another area. And so this culture that we've created in Instagram of like doing these videos where we take somebody else's clip and go like, did you see like, I hate it too. What really bothers me is when I see our friends doing it to our other friends.
I know.
It's like, oh,
it's so cringe.
I'm not going to roll someone on the bus right now, but it's like, I just saw one of our friends doing that to another one of our friends. I'm like, dude, you guys are both good people in the space that are presenting.
Just do the Godfather thing that you do sometimes.
Kiss the ring.
Send them both a text. Hey, you guys need to relax. Hey,
back off.
Yeah. Calm the fuck down.
You want us to talk about you guys?
Yeah. He's spoken for. You
know? Okay, I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. You know, I wish, and maybe Doug, and maybe the editing team could pull this out for us, because this is even pre-Kyle. Kyle never even seen this before. Remember when we did, so I just want to point out one, okay? We had that idea before that shit even happened.
We did.
This was like 6+ years ago. We shot all this content on the green screen.
Other people.
Where we would have a YouTube clip of somebody teaching an exercise or dropping something like that. And the three of us had the mics. Doug had our little faces down the corner. And we were trying to be kind of comedic about it, right? So we but then what we saw after we created like five of them, we look back and it's like, you know what?
Dicks.
Yeah, we just look like it's we're like being, yeah, dicks. And we like, you know what, as funny as it may be, or
we never aired them.
And it's still the same. You look like a douche.
And so it's crazy that we had that. We did it. We decided not to put it out because we didn't like we saw what it was kind of like, okay, this doesn't look right. We don't want this for the brand. And then now that's become like the most trendy thing to do on social media.
It's
so
douchey.
I hope you can find that, Doug. You got to be able to find some of those clips for the-
Don't air them here.
No, right. Just a little bit of it so they can see.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think we have the footage somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Right. I think, yeah. Why? Are you afraid because how young you look?
Yeah. 6 years ago?
How dark your hair is.
Like, wow, you guys, when did you guys record this? 96?
How fucked up my teeth are? I don't remember back that far. They might be horrible.
Oh, yeah, that was back then too. I forgot. You were chewing on rocks. Teeth? I remember that. That's right.
Well, I was like, did you have hair? You might have had hair, bro.
Maybe had hair.
Wow.
That's a good question. I don't know.
That's so long ago, you know?
Yeah. 6 years of Islam is a long time.
When you're... I think I did, actually. You did, I did, actually.
You did, because I think you went bald.
I was probably wearing a hat, though, so I was probably wearing a hat in the video. Yeah. But
by the way, the live event we're talking about, you can still buy tickets at Mind Pump.
The Bellagio in Las Vegas.
MindPumpLive.com. It's in Vegas. June 15th. We want to see you guys there.
We're going to get turned up. Hey, Sal will be up till like 9 o'clock. Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
We're keeping them up. Man.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Hey, I learned something.
Sal's the clause.
I learned something frustrating the other day that both frustrating and I never really thought about this. So over the weekend, so as you can hear, my voice is still a little strained. I still have a little bit of laryngitis. Whatever this cold is, it just won't go away. It's just sticking around. It's really strange. But over the weekend, I hadn't gotten asthma in a long time. When I was a kid, I had asthma all the time. Didn't you have asthma? I remember you saying that, yeah. You never had it? Okay. Mm. So I had asthma as a kid all the time.
You're the wheezy kid, right?
Every winter and sometimes in the fall or summer, especially if I got sick, I'd have to get treatments for asthma. In fact, I'd actually got hospitalized a couple times where I'd wake my mom up in the middle of the night because I couldn't breathe and they'd have to rush me to the hospital. And
I was the allergy kid.
Okay. Yeah. Did you have to ever get the nebulizer in the hospital?
No, but I had to get shots every week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I just dealt with this for my whole life. So anyway, fast forward, I outgrew it probably mid to late teens. I really didn't have to use inhalers or anything like that. Kind of outgrew it. And I have an inhaler that I'll use once every 2 or 3 years. If I get sick, sometimes it'll happen as I'll need to use it at night. So I don't like cough all night or whatever. That's it. And it's albuterol, it's a beta receptor agonist or whatever. So anyway, I have that. Well, over the weekend, I started getting asthma and I had to use my inhaler like every other hour. I'm like, oh, this sucks. But that usually what that meant when I was a kid and what I used to always use is I would always use the albuterol and then I would use an inhaled steroid. Back then it was Beclavent. Now it's Advair is what I use or whatever. So the inhaled steroid is anti-inflammatory in the lungs. So I had to use that. So I had to go get a prescription, use that, and it worked. I didn't have to use the rescue inhaler so often. And my wife she gets the box of it and she reads it and she goes, "This says it stunts growth in children." And I'm like, "Of course, yes, it does. If you use these anti-inflammatory steroids, these corticosteroids, as a kid while you're growing,
really,
it will." It has an effect on your growth. Now, if it goes in the lungs, it's less of an effect than if it was oral.
Are you saying you could have been like 6'8"?
You could have been as big as Buff as I am. That's crazy.
Bro, listen,
that, dude, that listen, sucks.
Man, listen, you're so much smaller.
I'm going to piece this together even more. That
sucks. Now you're going to be the little guy of the group.
I'm not even, first of all, you're the little guy.
I know, I'm shrieking right now.
All right. I increase your
enjoy.
Dose of Zepatite without you doing it. So anyway, I'm reading this and I'm like, oh my God, bro. I used inhaled steroids for like since I was little all the way up until, like I said, probably mid-teens, relatively regularly I'd have to use them. And the doctor would prescribe it, 2 puffs twice a day or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, holy shit. So here's how stunted growth works when you stunt your growth through those means. The long bones tend to get slightly stunted, but other bones don't. Now, I know this about myself and people have commented and I know this. If you look at my hands and my feet, they're slightly disproportionately large to my body. And it's true. You and I wear the same size shoe.
Yeah.
And you're, 4 inches taller than me?
Yeah, 3, yeah.
I bet I could have been like 6'3", bro. 6'2".
Wow.
I probably lost 2 inches.
That's why you haven't grown into your nose, too.
What a dick. I don't have a big nose. I don't understand.
I know you know. I'm going to give you a complex, though. Yeah, I'm going to make it a thing.
I told you. I had so much surgery. Ask me where I got my nose job. So perfect.
Hey, you want to know what Katrina's family would tell you about your laryngitis? So I'm going to start doing this to you guys because it drives me crazy. She does it to me all the time.
Is there something you have to say?
Yes. The woo-woo version. Every time. Okay, if you're sick, depending on what the cold or symptoms are, it always means something, you know, which you just imagine you're sick, you don't feel good. And then I have my wife like telling me like what my problem is, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I needed to hear this.
Yeah. So the laryngitis thing is supposed to be like there's something that you have to say you want to say and you're not saying it and you're not communicating it. So it's like, So it's like you're supposed to go back and go.
That's
like,
not how science works.
I know it's not how science works.
Yeah. Inflames the
stomach ache. It's something I'm holding on to, right? Or I have appendicitis.
Yeah, yeah. So when you start going bald, like you got something in your mind?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think she ever attributed
with an idea.
You got too many ideas coming out, bro.
I don't know what the bald one
signal.
Was.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so that's the deal. Because I was reading it, and I'm like, holy shit, bro. Because it's true. If you look at my hands and my feet, they're really
dude,
big.
What could have been? You know,
I don't know. I kind of like heaven. You know, what I mean.
That was one that always used to bother me because my dad's 6'7", my brother's 6'3", you know, and like
allergy medicines. Did you take? They must have shot you up with steroids too, homie.
Maybe. Yeah, I'll just jump in on that. Like, that's my excuse.
Damn,
yeah, sure. You are the Danny DeVito of the family, right?
Yeah, very penguin-like.
Oh, they're so big. That's crazy. When you're the runt,
his brothers are huge.
Yeah, I never met your brothers.
Yeah, no. Just one brother.
Oh, your brother. Yeah,
never brother and brother. Dad are huge.
Oh, yeah. I saw your dad. Your dad's 6'7", right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big boy. Is his whole family like that?
You know, he was kind of the anomaly. Actually, his uncle, he's 6'5", 6'6". And then, I mean, it's in the family and like even on my mom's side a little bit, but somehow just jumped past me.
Bro, old Italians, especially old Sicilians, were like my grandmother's generation, my grandfather's generation, maybe even my dad's generation, tiny. They were all little. And you know, when they came to America, they've done studies on this with immigrants. When they come to America within a generation or two, they're all much taller.
Yeah.
It was nutrient deficiencies.
Yeah.
They all had deficiencies. They were so poor. Wow. That's fucked up.
That's crazy.
You know, speaking of giant men, did you guys see the post that Shaq did? He had just bought a yacht recently. Did you guys see that?
Oh my God.
So the internet sometimes is so undefeated, bro. When the comments that somebody, like someone said, so someone added a comment right there. He did a picture and it's his yacht's behind him. He's like, I just got a yacht. What should I name it? And someone said, free throw, so you don't sink it. Because you'll never sink it.
Damn, he set himself up for that one.
Oh, it's like so good. I died laughing.
He's got to get a lot of specially made stuff, right? Because he's so big.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all the cars, he has to they have to engineer it so the seat's in the back seat. So they basically put front seat in the back seat.
Like that?
Yeah, because he's...
Wow.
What a bummer. Dude, like someone like that, I guarantee he's never been able to drive an exotic car. You can't fit it in an exotic car like that. Bro. They're all tiny.
You have to put it on
custom make them.
The pedals are like this. Like you can't... There's no way a guy...
How crappy would it be if you were as big as him and you were never pro athlete? You're just uncomfortable all the time. You know what I mean? For no reason.
You just really like to read.
Yeah.
I feel that way. We did that just the other day. There was a girl who called in, like whenever we assume, right? Because someone's like, this girl was like 6 foot. And we're like, oh, did you play any sports? She's like, no.
Not so really.
Just oops. Yeah. You feel bad. You're just like,
awkward.
Yeah.
It's cool. No, I mean, that would suck to be that big and uncomfortable without ever making millions of dollars in a sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Anyway,
crazy.
Yeah,
speaking of reading, I read a stat and you guys have probably heard the stat before. I'm gonna pull it up. I read this stat and this individual put it in a way to where it really blew my mind. So trip off this. You're gonna love this, Adam. This is right up your alley.
Oh, okay.
On average, now I know California's around this, okay? We spend $15,000 per child per year in public schools. So in a public school receives funding generally around fitness. It depends on state to state, but I know this is true for California. $15,000 per student per school year. Now, this person says, imagine if that money went directly to families. And I've always thought that. Like, imagine if a family had 15 grand for
voucher system.
How much better of an education could they find than their local, you know, whatever. Here's what this guy put it, and I never thought of this. A teacher, a really good teacher, could set up a micro school with 10 students and pull $154,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
A good teacher can literally just get 10 students.
Yeah.
Take that 15 grand.
That's a great model.
And they're making way more than they would as a teacher in a public school, having to teach 30 kids in a classroom.
Yeah. And you got way more one-on-one. I mean, that was one of the most impressive.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, I know.
Education.
No, I mean, we're starting to see it though. You guys see it, right? Like there's a lot of people that are trying to disrupt. I mean, I saw Hormozy the other day. I didn't even know he was building a school. Did you know he was building a school?
No.
Yeah, what's it? Look it up. Look up what it's called or and where he's at with it right now. But I mean, you got him, you have Elon, you have.
There's a few in Texas. Tim Kennedy has a
good Tim Kennedy. School. So there's a lot of people that are starting to disrupt that. I mean,
you know what? After reading that, imagine if you got enough teachers to. Because a lot of teachers complain about how little they get paid. They get paid very little. It's hard work, et cetera, et cetera. But imagine if you had enough teachers who were like, you know what? I do a damn good job. I could easily find 10 families to pay me.
Yeah.
Like, let's make this happen. The only problem is the families have the money. But if we're able to get the money from the state instead of going to the school.
Sure.
Oh, my God. They would crush. Yeah. What is it? So much better.
It's called school, spelled with a K.
Okay. We don't need no.
Is it started? Is it live?
I don't know.
Oh, that you just did like YouTube
and what is he teaching?
I think
it's more business type things.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Is it specific to that?
Yeah.
I believe so, but I need $10,000 monthly income, community mastery, etc. So
interesting.
I don't think it's like trying to replace standard education.
Okay, all right. Hey, but I got to tell you guys about an interesting study on cannabis that came out. I'm going to pull it up here.
Positive or negative?
See if I tell you, then you'll know what's going to happen. Actually, I'll just read the title. It's positive. Study links recreational cannabis use to lower risks of cognitive decline and dementia-related diseases. So
what?
Yes. So a new study published in the journal Current Alzheimer Research that looked at 4,744 American adults over 45 using self-reported methods of calculating cognitive decline found those who used cannabis recreationally had a 96% lower chance of developing what they called subjective cognitive decline. So, okay, why are
you
laughing?
You know the flaw in that study? It's self-reported. Yeah, ask a bunch of stoners. Hey, do you feel smarter than what you were born? Yeah, bro. I'm fucking way smarter.
I wrote down.
I came up with this idea. Yeah.
I didn't even think of that, bro.
Look at all these ideas I have.
That's the flaw in that study for sure, bro.
That's hilarious.
Hey, ask a bunch of stoners if they think they're smarter today than they were fucking 10 years ago when they weren't smarter.
I didn't even piece that together. That's hilarious.
Meanwhile, we have the most flat earth numbers ever.
You know why I think of that too? I used to have so many like friends.
They do that for alcohol too. Hey, are you guys doing any better?
The productivity one, like I bet you there's flawed studies with that too. Because I remember like trying to talk my friends from like smoking weed so much. Like, hey, I know you think you're really productive on it, stuff like that. But imagine what you would be. It makes me get up and I'm motivated when I do it. Their perception of being high is so positive. So good.
Now to
they report all these
to the defense, the study is following them over time and they're answering questions like, do you forget this? Do you remember this? How does this work? How do you feel here? So there may be something to it because I have seen other
cognitive
studies.
Tests they have to do, or is this just all like?
Yes. So, but it's not done by a researcher. Okay. Yeah. That being said, but I did, this does kind of connect to other studies I've seen because they are researching cannabinoids for things like dementia and Alzheimer's. Now the theory is that it may help with insulin sensitivity. And there may be some neuronal pruning effects that may reduce the risks of some of these diseases. So, this isn't crazy. It isn't in the realm of crazy. In fact, Doug, you could look up cannabinoid research and dementia, and you'll actually find.
Wasn't it? It's mainly the cannabinoids, right? It's not the THC.
THC is a cannabinoid.
Well, okay, so that's all in combination, or have they parsed out like
these are specific cannabinoids? These are weed users.
Yeah, it was interesting that the study didn't make them either parse out if they were smokers or edible eaters, too, because I would think that would make a difference, too, with dementia. Like, I would imagine smoking and inhaling.
Smoking's always going to be worse.
Right? Yeah. So I would think that would be not ideal. Yeah.
But like I said, I've seen other studies, and I know that they're studying cannabinoids for brain disorders because they do find that it does affect short-term memory, but there may be something to that to where it may prevent other things.
I mean, anecdotally, it was funny because like when we first started the show, like I was probably the least user out of all of us and was always kind of looking out for any kind of nootropic or anything to help out. Cause it was just hard for me to remember things and had a hard time, from playing football for so long, but just would eat like a 5 milligram edible, like occasionally. And I felt like I could recall information easier. It was my own personal experience.
Doug, did you find any studies?
I wonder if it was that for you or like,
there are studies.
Yeah, it might be that.
According to this, though, there are no research studies that prove cannabis or products such as cannabis oil can stop, slow, reverse, or prevent
diseases. Right. They haven't done any specific studies.
Right. But, agitation, dementia, that come with dementia, et cetera.
Now, Doug, will you ever use, if you're not with us, will you ever use cannabis at home?
It would be very rare.
Yeah, I wouldn't think you do.
Yeah. I really don't like it. As Because it, one thing, it disrupts my sleep. It helps you go to sleep, but it disrupts my sleep.
Yeah. Mm. So it's just when we peer pressure.
That's not the main reason, though. You eat a lot on it. You snack on it.
Oh, yeah. If I do it a little bit earlier in the day, my appetite goes through the roof.
Yeah, I used to use it. That used to be like my way of gaining. Like that was like how I use it to bulk.
Maybe if they did a cannabis terzepatide blend, it might be okay for me.
Yeah, see, I'm pulling up all kinds of because they are looking into it. And the pharmaceutical companies, for a second, I don't know if they still are looking at cannabinoids and dementia and Alzheimer's. So, I mean, it's interesting. So here's a study that I just found that THC saw an improvement in individuals who used it for things like agitation, aggression, irritability, lability, anxiety and insomnia. They also saw that they're, so this study was for neuropsychiatric symptoms of dementia. So, I don't know. It's very interesting. There's definitely something there, is what I'm saying. Just like the studies that show that people who use cannabis regularly tend to have less body fat. That's a weird one. Have you guys seen those? I've seen those. I've talked about those before.
Yeah. Which is weird because you think of the munchies and stuff like that, but
that's why it's so weird.
Yeah, that's why it's so interesting to me.
Yeah. Now all these people.
Now, how do you? What is yours and Jessica's consumption look like with cannabis? I haven't asked you that.
I use a lot less now.
A lot less.
Yeah.
Maybe. Her too, or is she still like it?
Less, but.
Who uses it more, her or you?
She does.
She uses it more than you.
Yeah, she uses it more than I do. But I'm probably maybe twice a week, once a week.
And then she's like me. She likes to smoke it, right? She's not an edible person?
Either.
Oh, either.
Either one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Edibles are just, I don't know. Katrina prefers an edible. That's normally how I can get her.
Inhaling it for me can make me paranoid or anxious during the day. So like going out during the day, I don't like the way it feels. Edibles preferable.
You rarely ever catch me in the daytime having that. It's normally nighttime thing.
Dude, I got to bring up another article that was ridiculous. The media is funny with the way they spin things to try to, and people just read headlines. So they'll assume what the headline said was correct. But I'll read you the headline first. This is in the Daily Mail health section. Anyway, 16.5 million Americans are at risk of stroke from exercising too hard.
Oh, is that the one that Rob Wolf?
Yeah,
Rob Wolf.
Study suggests. Okay, so oh no, you guys working out will give you a stroke.
Yeah,
this is when I start to think that they are purposely trying.
Love what they're trying to infer there. Yeah,
This is when I start to think, and I've seen a lot of articles that are ridiculous like this. Like, are they literally trying to get people to stop exercising? Are they demonizing exercise? So here's what happened. Indian scientists created a model for how blockages affected arteries in the neck. They found high blood flow in those that were partially blocked raised stroke risk. Therefore, when you're working out and increasing blood flow, you could increase your risk of stroke from the blood flow. Stupid. Dumb. All the studies that we have show unequivocally exercising properly.
How does something like that get funded? Like, what's the desired outcome?
It's not. I think that the article is what does it. I think the scientists
sensationalize it to get clicks.
Yeah, and the study are like, yeah, this actually doesn't mean anything.
Well, you know? Yeah, and I was wondering too, because Rob Wolf made the point. It's like, you know, is this an attempt to start normalizing like deaths? You know, that there may be an increase.
He was like,
that we're going to see.
He was like subtly pointing vaccine direction, right? I was assuming that was kind of
sounded like that was alluding to.
Yeah, was he was alluding to?
He didn't say that, but it felt like that was kind of the undertone of that.
Yeah, and so what it's saying here, this is simulated. This is like a simulated model. And they're saying scientists found that the healthy and mildly blocked carotid arteries had their health boosted by exercise. But those with severe blockage, the results were described as concerning. Well, if you have severe blockage, a lot of things can cause potential problems. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to say if you have an almost fully blocked artery, carotid artery, then working out real hard might cause a problem. Well, yeah, so... So is someone hugging you too hard or I don't know. Like it's crazy because you read the article or the headline and the average person's like, oh my God, honey, this is why I'm not going to go work out.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I already had a stroke. Doing that. I don't want another one.
That's crazy.
I know. Yeah.
You know what else is crazy? I'm in the middle of it right now. I'm probably maybe a little over halfway right now. I'm listening to the Patrick Bet David interview Suge Knight in prison.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy. It's already crazy.
You were
right?
Starting to talk about this and then you had to stop.
Yeah. So he, and he basically, I didn't know this. So Patrick Bet David prefaces it before it starts. Suge Knight reached out to him. So Suge Knight's like a fan of the show.
Oh, really?
And it was like, and I don't know if you guys are following
he's in prison.
How much? Yeah, he's in prison. So I don't know how much you guys follow PBD and stuff like that and the content he's been, but he's been going. Crushing. Yeah, he's been, yeah, he's crushing right now, and he's been interviewing all kinds of people and challenge. Like, I think he interviewed P. Diddy's lawyer. And so he's like doing a lot of like interviews like that. And Suge Knight reached out to him. It's just like, hey, call me. I'll basically spill the beans about Diddy, Tupac, B.I.G., whatever. So they talked about a lot of different things. And probably the thing that I thought was most interesting, and by no means is he defending P. Diddy, because he's like, we're not friends. I don't like that fool, whatever. Like, he's like, so he's not, but he's like, he's basically was alluding that, like, he's just a fall guy. He's like, first of all, he's like, where do you think he learned that behavior?
Sure.
He's like, so yeah. that was a taught behavior to do that.
How to use that,
yes,
to gain power.
And yes. Yeah. And so he starts alluding to, like, the big executives like Clive Owen and Jimmy Ivey and, like, some of these big name guys. And he says, and part of what, and then they talked about Cat Williams and what Cat Williams said, like how 2024 is going to be crazy. The reason why that is because for so many decades, there's been this machine that's produced artists. And there's been the people at the top that have decided who's going to be the most famous, who's going to make what money, and all these the gatekeepers of this for the longest time. And they've had ways to entrap people and control them and manipulate them. And this has been happening for a very long time. And for the first time ever, it's being massively disrupted. And because it's being disrupted, that's why all this stuff is coming out, because it's no longer working. The powers that be can no longer, like, control and decide who's going to be the most famous.
It's all falling apart.
Yeah, so it's all falling apart, which is how and why Cat Williams was able to predict what he's predicting is unfolding. And then he said something else that I never heard anyone say. He referred to Illuminati and Freemasons, and he referred to Freemasons as, like, God fearing, God believing, like, underground, like, high power group, and Illuminati is like devil worshiping, devil like. Have you heard any of that? I know you're more into reading all that stuff.
Yeah, I've read about all that stuff.
You have,
like, Skull and Bones and all the secret societies, and I mean, there's a lot of, like, intertwining crossover too, when you get, like, further in the levels of each, and, like, 33rd Masons and all that.
Yeah,
and so it's, yeah, because it's a lot of the secretive stuff. Like, they have, like, rituals, and it's all, like, on the surface, they do a lot of community work. And the Illuminati itself, this has always been one that there's references back in the day for the Knights Templar sort of being excommunicated from the church, and, like, you know, from going and having that whole war where they collect a lot of relics and stuff. And so they've tied them to a lot of the different relics that are gone, like the Ark of the Covenant, and, like, this and that, and that they had their hands on it and they hid it, and they have all this, like, secret knowledge and power, and that they sort of turned that once they got excommunicated. Like, a lot of them went underground and created Illuminati. And so anyway, this is all like crazy, like, real rabbit hole stuff that I read a bit of the Dan Brown books and, you know, stuff like that about symbolism.
So Illuminati is supposed to be, like, Satan worshiping?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Freemasons.
That kind of makes sense. Illuminati, you know, Lucifer, light.
Yes, it's the light being.
Or angel light bearer. Or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the interview is sucking me in right now. I'm like, I think I'm halfway through it already.
There's a lot of Freemasonry symbolism on old buildings. And
a lot of the presidents were Freemasons.
Yeah. So it's, what is it? It's a protractor, right?
Or
what is
it? Yeah. And, like, even this, and, like, so if you look at, like, Gmail and all, they have, like, a little pouch that they have, like, in their ceremonies. It looks so, if you, that's why you look at a lot of these big, like, tech companies, and you see a lot of their logos and symbolism. Like, there's Freemasonry stuff that's in there too. Weird. With the protractors.
Yeah. There's a lot of weird, I mean, stuff.
And so part of, like, you know, it was funny because Katrina told me about the interview first, and then she was talking about, yeah, but then he was, and I started saying, like, oh, I bet he's defending himself like this. And she's like, oh my God, that's exactly how he's defending himself. I said, well, yeah, of course. He's like, I'm like, so he's thrusted into this industry that is completely corrupt, dirty, and stuff like that. And he's just was a bigger, badder motherfucker than all those guys. I mean, try messing with Suge. Like, he's like that. He's real gangster. And so, of
Didn't
course.
He hold the, what's his name? Vanilla Ice over
yes,
a balcony?
Yes. He's got all kinds of crazy stories.
I love that
But that
story.
Was that yeah. was his way of crazy. Controlling an uncontrollable environment like that. And of course, he ends up losing that battle because he's not connected enough and powerful enough. And so he did what he could do to get to where he's at. And supposedly, like, his company was worth like $500 or $700 million before he went in, and it was all to get him in, so then they could basically rip the company out from underneath him for pennies on the dollar.
You guys ever seen, since we're going down here, you ever seen that video? I don't know what it was. I think it was George Bush Sr.'s funeral or Trump's inauguration. I don't remember what it was, but like all these, like Clinton and, you know, Hillary Clinton, all these people were getting envelopes at this event. And they're opening them, and then all of their faces drop. Have you seen that video? Uh-huh. What was that?
No, I haven't seen that.
I've seen that. I think that was at H.W. Bush's funeral.
Bro, you haven't seen that video?
Pull
it up, Doug.
The speculation, of course, to like the
it was telling that Epstein was going to get caught.
Exactly. Like, it was like a revealing of like.
So Epstein at this thing, we have all these like ex-presidents and powerful people. All of them get this mysterious envelope, and they all open it kind of on the same time.
I do
you
find
see
it
the
really
looks on their faces.
That was when was it when Hillary Clinton's like emails were starting to get looked at? Like, it was kind of the timing of that was all interesting.
Yeah, dude, it's weird.
I do find it really interesting, and I the most interesting thing about the Suge thing was him making that point. And it's like, you know, that's so true. Like, you all of us are like, oh my god, Epstein, Diddy, oh, such bad people. It's like, this is learned behavior. Like, somebody taught these guys, this is the formula. What you do with these powerful rich people is shower them with money and women and sex and drugs and have a good time and record these motherfuckers doing all this stuff, and then you hold that over their head.
You think about intelligence agencies, what's the best way to get intel on people? You know, the honeypot is like used for. And so now you could look all the way back, and this is my own theory, but like Project Mockingbird, and you could get into that sort of a understanding of how intelligence agencies got their fingers in every single entertainment industry. And they were able to control messaging and propaganda and what was coming in and out of Hollywood exclusively. And it's like, this is just stuff that gets overlooked, but it never left.
No.
Yeah, that's what both Kat and Suge were saying. It was just like, dude, Hollywood isn't designed to entertain you. It's by a byproduct, it entertains
it's
you.
It's been propaganda since day one.
These are the envelopes that as they're opening them, and the looks on their faces are like, what? Oh, that's just one clip. But it goes through a bunch of really.
So did you hear?
People.
Did you know this along these lines? As we're talking about this in Hollywood, I saw an interview with
Hillary. They're just all freaking out. They all have these same strange envelopes.
They're like all like scared.
So I saw an interview with Candace Owens, and then I saw another interview with forget who else was saying it. But Doug can Google this and look this up. Do you know how many? Do you know that the Pentagon has a allocated budget for Hollywood?
Yeah, I know that.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. And some of the biggest movies that we've had that were like biggest blockbuster movies that ever happened were funded by them.
Yep. So it's a propaganda machine.
Yes.
You've heard, did you guys ever hear Eisenhower's, one of his farewell speeches on beware of the military-industrial complex? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He literally did a speech to the American public, and he told them, this monster, we need to stop this monster, this military-industrial complex. They are pulling the strings. And they ignored it. You could pull it up and listen to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's...
Well, it's all out in the open now. I mean, I don't know, man.
I mean, we're to listen to the one that, like I said, I'm listening to. It's a little tough to listen to because it's obviously... It's like every 15 minutes, it gets interrupted.
He's calling from prison.
Yeah, he's calling from prison. So they had to put it... So it's an hour and 15 minutes or hour and a half interview in 15-minute blocks.
Oh, wow.
So, like, you hear the operator come on, and then it's like... they tried their best to edit it so there's not a gap for the listener, but you still know because you hear the operator come on in the background, and then the next clip gets edited and smushed in or whatever. And he is on a phone. But I thought PBD did a pretty good job of, like, he would say something and then he'd clarify it in case you're, like, kind of trying to listen to what he was saying. But super, super interesting what he was dropping on there.
This year's going to be weird.
It's just getting more weird.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Right. Look, it's by the way, the shout out is our live event. It's mindpumplive.com. We still have spots available if you want to come see us. Live event in Las Vegas on June 15th. Get yourself signed up. ButcherBox is a company that delivers grass-fed meats, heritage pork, free-range chicken, wild-caught fish to your door at great prices. Go check them out. Get healthy meat, good protein. Go to butcherbox.com/mindpump, and on that link, you'll get $20 off your first box. All right, back to the show.
Our first caller is Tyler from Minnesota.
What up, Tyler?
What's up, Tyler? How can we help you?
Hey, guys. Nice to meet you in person. It's so cool to like see you guys versus just like on the podcast. So it's a pleasure to meet you guys.
Thank you.
Right on, man.
Sweet. So I'll get right into my question. So I'm 5'10", I'm 19 years old, and I'm currently a collegiate athlete. So during my first college season, which was last fall, I dropped from 145 pounds down to 130 pounds, which put me at like 7 to 8% body fat. This was mainly due to me like under eating at like 2,300 calories and then also overtraining basically every single day with practice and then doing stuff outside of that. I was taking around 20,000 to 2,500 steps a day, and I wasn't like in a good place mentally or physically. And then that's when I found your guys' podcast, and I started listening to you guys, and you talked about like reverse dieting, things like that. And that really helped me. I started bulking, I started weight training more, I cut my cardio down, and then all my lifts started to go up. I actually put on 20 pounds to all my squat, deadlift, and bench press. Actually more than that on like my deadlift, which is pretty good. And now I'm sitting at about 12% body fat and feeling a lot healthier. So thank you guys for that.
Awesome.
Right. So yeah. So my question for you guys is, as I get closer to my upcoming season next fall, how can I continue to gain muscle while also focusing on my sport, especially because I'll have increased amounts of cardio and be focusing on practice and things of that. So like what kind of programming do you guys recommend?
Great question.
My second half of that question is also, how can I continue or should I continue to bulk around like 2,700 calories, or should I go more into like a maintenance or cutting phase?
Good question. Yeah. So are you still, cause you're not in season right now, right?
Yeah. How long until
I'm not, no.
How long until training starts for the season?
It'll be August.
Okay.
So like now, 4 months.
During this period of time, have you played any soccer? Have you done any games on your own, clubs?
We have off season training, which will be like 4 times a week. So that will up my cardio a little bit, but outside of that, I won't do a lot of like extra work outside or like extra running.
Now, how much do you weigh now? Cause you weighed 135 before now. And since you've been reverse dieting, all that stuff, what's your body weight at now? Yeah.
I'm at 146.
Okay. And then how do you feel performance wise? Has it positively or negatively impacted your performance on the field?
I'd say it's positively impacted for sure. I feel stronger. Before I felt like a little bit weaker, like I'd run out of energy sometimes. Now that like I'm eating more and I feel like I have more energy and just a little bit stronger too.
Okay, good. And you're a collegiate athlete, so this, you're pretty high level.
I feel like performance advanced and staying in maintenance.
Yeah. I would not try to gain muscle while in season. So the goal is not to chase a lot of physical progress when in season. The goal when in season is to try to maintain your health and prevent injury. Off season is when you want to build. And here's why. If you push trying to gain while playing, typically what happens is the risk of injury tends to go up quite a bit. So really it's about reducing the volume of your training and it's about eating appropriately. I don't think you should ever go in a cut.
No.
When in season, I think you should eat and feed your body and try to maintain or gain a little bit if that feels okay. But you're not trying to make any big changes, right? So you're not trying to go crazy bulk. Definitely not go on a cut. What does your practice and game schedule look like when you're in season?
4 days a week, right? Is it
in season?
Oh.
Yeah. So the in season, it's usually 5 or 6 days a week. We'll also have a preseason where we're doing like double days. So during that time, we'll usually be hitting 20,000 steps a day, at least.
Okay. I think what would probably be an appropriate way to strength train during that period of time would be like 1 or 2 lifts a day. Yeah,
MAPS 15.
Yeah, MAPS 15 would be a good kind of baseline program for you. I don't think you should do a full strength training workout, 1 or 2 days a week while you're doing that. You're just trying to maintain health, mobility, and strength. Yeah. And even the intensity of the strength training is going
to
be moderate.
What about his 4 months leading up to that? That's what he's getting at right
4 months leading up to it, we could still, MAPS performance advanced would be your game changer. And I would eat in a slight surplus while doing that just to fuel performance
gains. Now, any modifications to that because he's doing soccer 4 times a week, even in the off season right now? So he's playing. He's going to be. Like, would you pull back a day, or would you replace like some of the skill? Would you count that as his skills days?
You could take a skill day out. It depends on like how much volume that is. Yeah, in terms of you being taxed, so you'd have to like really pay attention to your body's feedback with that. However, it would be, you know, just as a good idea to apply a skill session and then go to practice, depending on if that's, you know, an appropriate amount of stress.
When you're playing, when you're doing the 4 days a week now off season, what does that look like? Give me a rundown of a day.
Yeah. So we'll do normally like two harder sessions and then two lighter sessions. Oh, so it does alternate a little bit. So there are some days where it's a little bit more recovery based and just skills from actually running as much, which is nice. So we have a little time to recover there. And then there will be two harder days where it's around 10,000 steps and a little bit more now, vigorous cardio focused.
How long are the sessions when you're doing the hard days?
Hour and a half to 2 hours. Usually it's around an hour and a half.
Okay. And then, so someone like you at your level of training, you've been doing this for a long time at your age. How do you feel in the off season with this? Does it feel like a piece of cake, or are you like, oh my God, this is really hard?
I just find it's pretty easy for me most of the time.
Okay.
I've been in pretty good cardio shape my whole life. So like coming out of it into like off season stuff, it feels pretty easy, which is nice.
I think Mass Performance Advanced would be good. And I think taking out one of the skills days. And if you feel tired,
or
reduce the volume on the training of the program. But in the off season, I think you'd be okay, because your body is built such high resilience for that kind of training. I don't think it's pushing you too far.
What's the other
option? Well, even on the skill days, you'll see there's specific priming sequences, like a list of like mobility exercises for you to prime before some of these skill days. So you could even apply that priming sequence before your intensified practice. So that would still be valuable to you. Just, it's really like trying to teach the body these specific movements so you respond at an even greater level. So, but yeah, that would be sort of my recommendation.
Yeah, let's do this, Tyler, since this will be fun for us and good for our audience and our people in our forum. I'm gonna have Doug give you Performance Advanced. I'm also gonna have him put you in the forum, and then you can start to unpack the program, apply it yourself. And then if you have questions, just message us in the forum. Like, hey, I was thinking about doing this. Is that too much? And then Justin or us will respond to you. Like, yeah, it's a good call or whatever like that, if you have any questions. But I think MAPS Performance Advanced heading into the season, and then MAPS 15 when you get into season. Yep. We'll get you started on Advanced right now.
Great recipe for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been consistently playing high-level soccer, by the way?
So this is my second. I'll be going into my second year of collegiate soccer, and I was playing before that probably like 4 years. So I'm at 5 years of high intensity soccer. Okay. And before that, I did multi-sport before that too.
Okay. Okay. And the reason why I asked that is your ability to tolerate exercise stress is a lot higher than the average person. So, and that's why I asked you how you felt with your off-season training. If I took the average person, they told me they played soccer 4 days a week. That's a lot for the average person. But someone at your level, feels like you're probably cruising. It feels like it's probably easy for you. So I think Mass Performance Advanced would be perfect.
Also, do you feel disrespected that Sal wears Sambas?
No, he's good. He can wear whatever you want.
Okay. Just checking.
By the way, I'm the one that says soccer is the one of the top sports in the world. These guys that talk shit all the time.
We do talk shit.
All right.
I appreciate that.
We got you, Tyler. We're going to send that over to you, get you in the forum, and then just hit us up if you got any questions, bro. Look forward to seeing how it works out for you.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks, brother. A good point to make with that is, like when I would train like blue collar workers who were doing, they were construction
already
for 10
adapted
years.
To the
yeah,
volume.
It's like, yeah. I used to go every summer.
Animal, yeah.
Yeah, every summer I'd go and I'd work with my dad. And, even as a fit, 16, 17 year old kid, I'd just get hammered. My dad would whistle while he's working, it wasn't a big deal. And that just goes to show like the your tolerance for that type of stress when you've been doing it for so long and you're acclimated is just, it's so different.
Yeah, like, they're much more energy efficient.
Yeah. So like, it's like sometimes people hear us talk to the average person who's like, I do F45 4 days a week.
And we're telling them to scale way back.
Way back, much, right? Yeah. He's 19 years old. He's been playing high level soccer for a long time. He doesn't have kids, hopefully. I don't think he does. And, at his age and stuff like that. So, and he's gained muscle and he's bumped his calories up and he's given us no indication that he's overtrained. In fact, he said it feels like it's cruising. So adding something like Mass Performance is totally appropriate. That just highlights the individual variants.
Yeah, that's why I love that we do these right here, because, and again, why I can't stand short form reels and shorts and stuff that's 1 minute on and get into these debates with trainers of like, yeah, that makes a huge difference. That's that same, like that same question could be asked by a different person.
That's right.
And after we find out enough information, the advice is completely different. It's not, you know, it's not that generic that it's just like, oh yeah, you're an athlete, this applies, or oh, you want to play soccer, oh, this applies. It's like, no, there's, it's more nuanced than that.
Our next caller is Adam from the Cayman Islands.
What's up, Adam? How can we help you?
Hey, really great to speak to you, Sal, Adam, and Justin. Really appreciate you taking my call, and thank you for inviting me on. I've been listening to you guys since 2021, and your podcast got me through COVID. Your banter, your variety of conversation topics just allowed me to kind of really ground myself during that time, and mentally I really appreciate it. Physically, I have two of your programs, Anabolic and Aesthetic. But it's only been this year that I've really run them with fidelity. I've been focused on making sure I do the trigger sessions and the focus sessions. I'm 49. I'm in the best shape of my life right now, and that's down to you guys. My only criticism is, where were you 30 years ago with these programs? But then I realized you were probably only 15 or something like that.
Yeah, we're just starting to figure it out.
Adam was in the woods with 30 magazines.
So my question is, I'm in the second phase of the Aesthetics Maps program at the moment. And I was wondering, instead of the focus sessions, can I instead swim 10 lengths using arms only for one focus session, or swim with just legs for the next focus session? Like, would it have the same effect? I happen to be lucky enough to have access to a pool at the moment and would like to maximize the use of it.
What's the effect that you're looking for?
I guess now I've started really using the focus and trigger sessions, I see more kind of definition.
Okay. Well, definition is more of a, just a fat loss effect. So that's more like diet, calorie deficit. If you're looking for the effect of the focus session in terms of muscle building, it won't give you the same effect. However, you will get other effects that you may want, right? Stamina, endurance, stability in the joints of the shoulders and the hips. So it's activity. It's good for you. It gives you stamina and endurance. And if you really, really enjoy it, especially if you enjoy it more than your traditional focus session,
then do it.
Then do it.
That's the way I would approach this question. Is it the best way to build your arms? No. But if you got a pool and part of your goal is, hey, I want to use this thing, this would be nice, I like it, I enjoy it, it ain't gonna hurt you. No. Yeah. You're not gonna lose muscle from doing 10 lengths three times for, you know, arms and legs for swimming. That's not going to hurt you. If anything, it's only going to benefit you on the cardiovascular point that Sal's making.
It's very good for you.
And if you enjoy it, I see lots of benefit to it, but it's not the fastest way to get the biggest arms. If that was the question, like if you said, yo, I want jacked arms, I was thinking about doing this instead of that, I'd say, well, you'd be better off doing the focus sessions. That's going to grow your arms faster. But if you're a client of mine who wants to use his pool and wants to do this, this is where I would totally modify the program.
Okay, yeah, that all makes sense. You guys haven't really spoken that much about swimming. I remember one of you going through kind of a swimming program, and you know, how can I maybe maximize the use of my pool? And
I mean, so at that time in my life, I was kind of coming off my mobility kick. I wanted to get back in cardiovascular shape. It was a new skill for me. I really looked at it as like, you know, part of what has kept me training for over 20 years of my life consistently is, you know, I like to move in and out of different modalities to challenge myself. I did not approach it like, this is going to get me in the best shape aesthetically, or this is going to get me in the best. Like, it really was the value of consistency, consistently moving and training and trying new things is so good for the body. That's the mental approach I would tell you to have towards something like that. And then if you don't want it to impede on all the muscle that you built, just like I didn't want it to impede on that, just be aware of how much of it you're doing. If it turns into hour long plus cardio sessions, that's probably not benefiting the amount of lean body mass you have. And you, in fact, you're probably going to probably lose a little bit from doing so much cardio. But if you're doing, you know, 10 lengths, I don't know how long that takes, but that's not very long to do 10 lengths of the pool. It's definitely not no hour of cardio. That's not going to impede that at all. So I love you, you know, intermittently adding that into your week, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2 to 4 times a week, I think is a good amount of volume. That's not going to overdo it and lose muscle from it. And I think would gain ton of benefit and enjoy it.
Yeah. I would say if you're going to do a lot more swimming, then I wouldn't do MAPS Aesthetic because that's such a high volume program. We have other programs that would be more appropriate if you were going to do a lot of swimming.
Or he would replace it with the focus days, right?
Because like what you're doing here is fine. But let's say you want to swim 5 days a week and you really wanted to go and really work on it, then I would go to a different program with less volume.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I prefer, in a way, the anabolic for this one probably. Is that something that you would suggest as well?
Yep. I would suggest that.
And what's great about anabolic, it's so, I think, in its simplicity, the way it's structured, and to Sal's point, if like all of a sudden you're like really getting into the swimming, you're like, man, I'm enjoying this. I'm gonna go 5 days a week. And man, I'm starting to do 40 minutes of it. Well, then you scale all the way back to 1 day a week of anabolic and then 5 days of swimming because you're loving swimming so much. Or you're somewhere in the middle where you're like, 3 days a week of swimming's good, but I still love the strength training. So you do 2 days a week. You can really, but you just got to know how to listen to your body and tell if, are you recovering well? Do you feel good? Are you still staying strong? And let that be your driver of, oh, I probably need to scale back a little bit because I'm doing so much swimming, or let that be the driver to increase the volume of training. And anabolic is an easy program to kind of, you know, figure out how to do that.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's a great answer. In fact, I do need to listen to my body more. I feel like sometimes I overdo it and then I have to have, you know, a week or two out because, you know, my body's still recovering, especially as I age. I seem to have found that's an issue.
Yeah.
You know what a good program is too, where just less volume and it just kind of takes those things into account is our MAPS 40 plus program, which is similar to MAPS Anabolic in the way it's created. But some of the exercises are modified. You mentioned your age. Do you have that program?
Yeah, less impact on the joints.
Yeah, very valuable program.
Yeah, a lot of better exercise.
No, I don't actually. No, I haven't got that one at all.
I'll send that to you, Adam.
Oh, yeah, no, that's appreciated. Thank you. I'll take a look for sure.
You got it, my friend.
But that's obviously something similar to anabolic. So therefore, I just have to play around with it a little bit relation to adding swimming in within that.
That's
program.
Right. That's right.
I'm going to have Doug send a suitcase of money to you, too, if you could take care of that for us while you're out there.
Unfortunately, I'm not in banking. I'm in education.
Come on, Adam. Come on. It's the point of having you out there.
Right. Hey, if any of you visit anytime, feel free to drop me a line. I'll show you around.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, thanks very much for answering the question and taking the time. Really appreciate you guys.
You got it, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Thank you. Where are the Cayman Islands?
Boy, I think it's in the Caribbean. I don't know exactly where.
Isn't it where the deal Turks and Caicos and all that stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I think it's down in the same general area.
Because it's in because of where it's at. Like the rules and like laws, like
jurisdiction.
Yes.
Yeah. They. Like I don't think they have any taxes. In the Cayman Islands. Yeah.
That's where
all
those. It's
a tax shelter for a lot of people.
Yeah. So what is it like? They like that. Like a company's profits.
It's like, is it near Puerto Rico? It's like
Swiss bank accounts.
Is it near Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
I mean, like
Cancun, Jamaica, Cuba. Okay. And so the deal is that you could deposit. A company could have profits there, and then as long as you keep them there, they don't get taxed the same way. That's right. Is that correct?
That's correct. But you know, obviously we're dealing with the IRS and they have a way of taxing everybody's money everywhere. So I would be
there's
got to
be some legal reason.
Well, you see like, the Paul brothers now are in Puerto Rico, right?
Well, but that's legal. Yeah. Is what I'm saying. So there must be some legal thing.
There is. I mean, the country itself has no income tax, as far as I know.
Right. I think you have to live in Puerto Rico for like 6 months and a day or something like that.
So a lot of people have done in the past is they've created companies in the Cayman Islands and then had the money there. Now, if you try to repatriate it and bring it back to the
then
U.S., then it gets taxed. But officially, I think the IRS says it gets taxed anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know the exact rules. So
Doug's sure they figured it out. Yeah, exactly.
Doug's already lost a suitcase of money. Yeah. He's like, don't take that advice from Adam.
I'm just very nervous about some of these offshore plans people put out there. Yeah, so, of course. Just so you know.
Of course. Risky.
Last people you want to mess with. But anyway, I think he had a great question. And it really just depends on, you know, what you enjoy doing. So, you know, if he enjoys swimming, there's nothing wrong with doing that instead of
training around that.
That's it. He's not going to build as much muscle. So what?
And I like stuff like that. Again, especially as we age, right? I mean, at least for me, I've had to do this type of stuff just to keep it interesting for me.
Yeah.
Doing the same shit to be jacked all the time. I get bored of that.
You got to enjoy what you're doing. Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's got a pool now by his side, and it's like, man, that's going to just help your fitness. Do it, man.
Next caller is Jacqueline from Dubai.
Hey, Jacqueline, how can we help you?
Hey guys, trying not to fangirl too hard right now. Like, you know how most people listen to Calm or Headspace when they need to relax?
Yeah.
Whenever I feel stressed and I hear, like, see one of those what you eat in a day videos of those people having those obnoxiously low, like, amounts of food, I play your guys' episodes and it gets me through my meals. So it's been a lot of support.
We make people hungry.
Great.
Doug, can you fix the TV up there? Thank you. How can we help you, Jacqueline?
Right. So I've got like a three-parter kind of question. The first part is, you know, I need to gain weight and I need to start strength training. I have osteoporosis, so the strength itself is really important. But I go to the gym a lot and I see the women that end up weight training, strength training, that for better or like term of the word, they look a little bit usually chunkier or thicker. Like they look strong. But like what I want is like that more like that lean, defined kind of look. I mean, like the second part is I've been wanting to grow my glutes a lot. You know, I love the look of like the snapped waist with the glutes. But how much of that composition is due to genetics? Because I see a lot of women, again, working their glutes, but they never have the smaller waist. And for example, I've spent a lot of time at one point below 5% body fat, and I never had a defined core or defined abs. So I'm thinking, like I said, I want to know how much of it is composition, how much of it is training, how much of it is just down to genetics. Like, you'll never have a specific shape. And I have MAPS anabolic at the moment. That's the third part of the question. And I really struggle with the breaks during the workout. So what I try and do is I try and superset exercises. So for example, I'll do a bicep curl, try something with the triceps, and then maybe squats. Like, I'll do it in a bit of a circuit format. So technically the muscle itself is having the rest desired, and I'll try and keep my heart rate low, so it's not as much like a cardio workout. And I don't know if that's just completely contradictory to what you should be doing. I don't know if that's detrimental to the workout itself, but yeah, I'm all over the place.
So I'll answer that last part very quickly, 'cause that's an easy answer. And supersetting exercises in circuit fashion completely changes the programming, and it does completely change the effect of the workout. So it is now more of a stamina endurance based workout, and it is not building anymore. I have, would you mind if I ask you some more questions before I continue so I can give you better answers?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Have you dealt with eating disorders in the past?
Yeah, so I struggled with anorexia for 15 years, and a lot of that was overtraining as well as severely low amount of calories. So yeah, that was back then.
Okay, and the reason why I'm asking you that is, as someone your age, you're obviously very young, osteoporosis is very rare unless somebody has severely undernourished themselves for a long period of time. Were you hospitalized at any point?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Actually, after like coming out of rehab, so I worked a lot with Adil Khan, and he did the follistatin therapy for me, the follistatin gene injection at the end of last year. So again, my body's primed in a point to build muscle and to gain that type of strength because of that.
Okay. So, I'm going to say something to you, and I hope you can kind of trust what I'm saying. Okay. For the time being, and maybe for the foreseeable future, you probably can't trust your own eyes when it comes to how you perceive how bodies look, especially your own body, okay? Because of what you've dealt with and what's happened to you in the past, although you seem to be doing much better, looking at yourself in the mirror and judging your progress based off of your appearance, you are going to see things that other people don't necessarily see. It's not going to be objective. It's never fully objective when we look at ourselves, but your subjective opinion is very, very skewed in a direction that has led you in the past towards some pretty poor health. So
much that you could be doing phenomenal and your brain is going to tell you otherwise, right, which is going to fuck you.
The only way out of this, okay, is not going to be to try to change what you see. It's going to be to stop looking. So you're going to have to stop looking in the mirror and judging any progress based off of what you see in the mirror and what the scale says. You're going to have to completely submit and let go and judge your progress by your performance in the gym. 100% of everything you do, if you really want to move in the right direction, if you want to heal from what you've dealt with. And by the way, and I'm going to say this to sell you on what I'm saying, even though it's not necessarily the right thing to say. If you do what I'm about to tell you, you will look the way you think you want to look, although you may never really necessarily be able to see it, okay? So that's just to sell you. But the truth is, you can't look at yourself and judge yourself based off of your appearance. You can't look in the mirror and say, is my workout working? Is my butt developing? Is this leaner? Is this sculpting? Is this whatever? You have to completely, completely submit to performance. 100% of everything you do in the gym and 100% of everything you do with your diet has got to be focused on performance. And the one aspect of performance in particular is strength. If you're getting stronger, and I don't mean stronger like I can do 5 more exercises at the same time or I can move faster. I mean actual stronger. I'm lifting more weight. I'm adding 5 pounds to the bar, 10 pounds to the bar. I did 2 more reps. If you just focus single-mindedly on that, like hard-headed, like I will not look at anything else. All I care about is how strong I am. You will start to move towards the path of healing. You will solve the osteoporosis issue and you will start to develop the body, the physique, and the health that you're looking for. Now that's not where you're going to stop, but that's the only way you can start. Eventually you're going to have to just focus on health, but I can't tell you that right now because that won't work. So right now, just focus on strength. I have a program that I think you should follow. Powerlift. I'll send you MAPS Powerlift if you don't have it. I want you to feed yourself to get stronger. So that means hit your target body weight in grams of protein. Eat when you're hungry. And if you're not getting stronger in the gym, try to eat more. Mm-hmm. Even if you feel, and here's the deal, you're going to feel uncomfortable eating more because your signals are all off because of the years and years of restricting. Eating appropriate amounts of food to you is going to feel like you're stuffing yourself. So if you feel like you're stuffing yourself, you're probably eating the right amount kind of deal. So focus on performance, which is strength. Don't look in the mirror any longer than you have to. And when you do look in the mirror, try to adjust your gaze to my hair, my makeup, put my clothes on, get out. And don't weigh yourself. That's the only way this is going to work. Anything else I tell you is going to get hijacked by this challenge that you've been dealing with. And it's in osteoporosis with a young woman, if we don't move in the right direction, this can turn very bad very, very quickly. And I've worked with people like this. So what I'm saying is very, very serious.
If you're open to it, Jacqueline, I'd also like to put you in the forum. And I'd love for you to check in with us once a month. Because what I'll also tell you is that I'll give you that look that you want. It's obtainable, okay? Like, and you have the body, like you have the genetics to do it. You've got the small frame. I can see your structure. Like, if you trained to get bulky or to put weight on, you're actually going to get the shape you want. But the problem with that is the mental part. Yeah. Is it's going to play games because there's parts during that process where you go through this, the body starting to shape and change, and if you've struggled with that in the past, you're going to revert back to that feeling and then it's going to make you course correct. And we don't want you to do that. We want you to stay the course, which is why Sal's giving the advice of don't look in the mirror, don't weigh, just trust the process, feed your body accordingly. The only metric that we care about is more weight on the bar. You're benching more weight, you're squatting more weight, you're deadlifting more weight, you're hip thrusting more weight, and we're eating good amount of calories. All the other stuff, you got to trust the process and trust that we know what we're doing. And if you do that, if you submit like that, I'll give you the look that you want, but you got to fully commit.
It may even be worth the investment to get a coach, to get a trainer, to get totally somebody's eyes on you that gives you an objective feedback and also, too, to just help reassure you because it is so crazy the mental games you're going to be playing through this and the old default patterns that you had previous to that. So this is a completely different operating system that we need to learn and teach, teach your mind, teach your body, teach your focus on to just being comfortable with enjoying getting stronger and the process of that and, you know, honing in on that. So that would be my suggestion.
Are you working with anybody, Jacqueline, specifically with this? Do you have a therapist?
Well, I mean, I have doctors and therapists and dietitians that follow me to make sure, wonderful, for example, to prevent refeeding, to have gotten my calories up to a safe place.
Excellent. Great.
But I suppose all the advice for strength training goes so much against the instinct of, for example, I know how to manipulate my body through,
yeah,
maybe unhealthy, like calorie deficit. And it goes against everything that I suppose it takes to strength gain. Yep. So it's like goes against every single instinct you think of, like resting through sets. It just feels so,
yep,
wrong.
Yep. Listen, I know what the answer is, but I'll ask you anyway. Do you think you can trust your eyes and your instincts?
Oh gosh, that is for 15 years. That gave me osteoporosis, okay. So hell no.
Okay, so here's the deal.
That's a big step, though, that you at least understand that's
huge.
And are aware of that.
That's, yeah, huge. So that, so you know you can't trust your instincts. You know you can't trust your eyes. So what you're going to need to trust is our advice. Trust the people that you're working with. And here's what's going to happen over time. I've worked with people like you, Jacqueline, okay, in worse situations. Over time, those instincts are going to change a little bit, or at the very least, you're going to be able to say no to those instincts, and you're going to be able to identify them very quickly and know the right direction to move. But you're going to have to go against them. In other words, if you're going in a direction that feels automatic, probably moving in the wrong direction. If you're moving in a direction where, like, oh my gosh, like I should be moving more. Or, oh God, I feel like I'm stuffing myself. Okay, I'm probably doing the right thing.
All right, I got this. I can do this.
Yes, you can.
Can do it. We're going to put you in the forum, 100%. And I would love updates from you.
I tell you what, Jacqueline, can we have you back on the show? Can we do a follow-up with you in like 60 days?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Let's do a 60-day follow-up, and hopefully that, I think that'll help, and then we'll talk then, okay?
So MAPS Powerlift is coming your way. Yeah. Set you up in the forum. I still want you to check in with us, okay, every few weeks to a month. And then we'll do a follow-up in 60 days. So you got some accountability to follow what we're talking about.
Yeah, lean into the discomfort of this.
Yeah, I'll be out benching you guys before you know it.
I like that goal. I like it. It's not that far away for Sal.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so, so, so much.
You got
it. Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you. Oh, that's hard.
Yeah,
it's a really hard one.
It's tough because
she knows, though, at least, well, which is big.
Here's the hard part. Okay, just full transparency. We're doing a podcast. We have a 10-minute conversation with somebody, and so it's like I got to hit them hard with a bunch of truths.
You're thankfully, trying to get to the root.
Thankfully, what's working for us is we've built a relationship with her, an authority with her, because she's listened to the show, so it's more impactful than the average person. But the truth is, like when I've worked with people like that, this is a process, man.
Dude, this is a long process. This client, okay, which I've trained many of these clients, we're talking daily.
Yep.
So every day. You're right. Like this is
sometimes multiple times.
Like let's hope that we have that kind of an impact on her that she really takes the advice. But
that's why I want to do the follow up.
I would want to be talking to her daily because every day there's going to be little things that are going to challenge her on this process and. Keeping her straight during that is going to be so important to having success in this. And so, you know, hopefully she stays in touch with us in the forum and that we can help guide through this. And because this is, you know, this is one of my favorite parts of this job is that's life changing.
Yeah.
You take somebody who's suffered from that for 15 years and is that young and already dealing with osteoporosis and you reverse that.
And which you can.
Yes. Yeah. And you get them feeling different about themselves, their body. And then in addition to that, the bonus is they get the thing that they wanted, which is so crazy. Yeah. It's like,
well, it's funny because she'll have to detach from it first.
I know. She'll have to not care about it and not want,
the irony.
In order to get it. Uh-huh. Right. So funny.
Our next caller is Kyler from Utah.
Kyler, what's happening, man? How can we help you?
What's up?
Hey, pretty cool to meet you guys for the first time. So, some details that I included. So I'm 5'11", 220 pounds. I'm a little overweight right now. Trying to get that back down. Had kind of a rough last year. So getting dialed back in. Near the end of last year was when I actually sent in my question. I injured myself in kind of like, I keep having these injuries in my trap, in my rhomboid. So I keep doing them with like barbell shrugs. You know, I'll shrug too much weight. I'm trying to kind of increase the weight there. And then most recently, I kind of did the same thing by doing a pull down, you know, like an overhead pull down. So my question was kind of like, I am a software engineer. I do work from home, you know, obvious desk job. Maybe it has more to do with my posture, but my question was, how do I kind of prevent those rhomboid like entrap injuries and kind of move forward, you know, strengthening that and find a better way forward?
Is it your dominant side? Is it your, are you right or left-handed? And is it your dominant side?
So usually it's my dominant trap. And then the rhomboid, the further back when I was doing the pull down was my non-dominant side.
Kyler, have you had any previous neck injuries, any herniated discs or slipped discs in your cervical spine?
No, not that I know of anyway.
Did you play any sports where that might have been an issue? Football, wrestling, or anything like that?
Nope.
Okay. In my experience, repeated issues in the trap, rhomboid type area can oftentimes come from an undiagnosed or diagnosed herniation in one of the discs. And so when you shrug, what a lot of people do when they shrug is they'll kind of look up and bring their neck back a little bit and cause the cervical spine to compress a little bit. And if that causes any pressure on one of the nerves that comes out of the spine there into that area, then you kind of get this pain and you press on it and it kind of goes away, but it doesn't. It sticks around for a little while type of deal. Is that what it feels like to you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of similar. So yeah, it's usually the, you know, at the top of the motion on the barbell shrug and I'm trying to like, when I, you know, increase the weight too much, you know, maybe I don't have the best of form, then I feel it at the top and then it's pretty debilitating for the next day or two.
Yeah. So. That sounds like a nerve pain, not muscle pain, you know, type of issue. Do you feel it now?
No, I kind of reduced volume after this. Okay. I've also kind of been, you know, struggling hit and miss with my workouts. So I kind of reduced. I was doing a pretty high volume. I was doing Athlenex's Beast PPL, pull push legs. And I figured out that it was just probably too much volume. And that might have been a part of the problem.
Yeah, overtraining can cause an increased risk of injury. But
he also could be, because he's sitting at a desk all day too, and his scapulas roll forward all day long too. Just traps could be overactive, and then he's crushing it workout-wise. It could just be
But because it's like, it feels like pop, pain, oh my God, 2 days of pain. You know, it sounds a lot like an impinged nerve rather than a muscle. So when you do shrugs, what you want to do when you do shrugs is you want to make your head as tall as possible. So do you have MAPS Prime?
No.
Okay, I'm going to send that to you. We have something called a wall test. And in the wall test, we walk you through some spinal traction through kind of this shoulder mobility kind of, you know, movement. And what you're doing is you're pressing, there's a small nodule at the base of your skull. You're pressing that into the wall and you're lengthening your spine at the same time. So you're trying to make your head as tall as possible.
As vertical as possible with your spine.
So it's almost like you're giving yourself a double chin, but also trying to make your neck real tall. That's the position you want to hold while you shrug. What you don't want to do is shrug and kind of look up or even look down because that can compress the spine. In the meantime, I would avoid shrugs until we really start to figure out how to get that position.
Yeah.
But the wall test in MAPS Prime, especially the head and shoulder part where your
external rotations is especially important because especially with your desk job. Like if we can get you to be able to maintain this nice vertical upright postural position that you can brace and hold and control and have strength in that. And so that's the thing, is building strength back in that external rotation. So, you know, face pulls and things to prime before you do any kind of like shoulder work. You know, it's going to be essential to really just keep hammering that good posture.
And ideally we avoid the shrugs right now. When you reintroduce them, don't be chasing weight. Chase the technique, right? So after you've gone through the process of prime and you learn like the position that we want your neck, your shoulders to be in when you do the exercise, that becomes more important than adding weight to the bar. So I'm okay with you going back to shrugs eventually once you start to feel much better. But then when you're doing it, you're, instead of you paying attention to like, oh, I could do 10 more or 20 more pounds, you're going like, is my posture staying perfect through the movement and only increasing weight based off of that. And so let that be your guide, your guiding star. Yeah.
You know, even now while you're sitting there, I could show you something that might help a little bit. This is really challenging to do virtually. But I could try walking you through something to show you a little bit about of what this kind of traction, with traction meaning we're trying to create space in the spine might feel like. So if you sat up tall right now for me, I could kind of walk you through. Is that okay?
Yeah. Okay,
so kind of sit up tall, and I want you to take your hands at your sides, and I want you to supinate them. So you're going to face your palms forward, but bring them down. Bring them straight down. Arms straight down. Okay. So supinated straight down. Bring your shoulders down like you're trying to bring your shoulder blades down as far as you can. Now give yourself a little bit of a double chin. So it's like you're pulling your head back. Not, don't look, don't let your head go up, but yeah, your chin back. You now while doing that, now try to make your head go straight up at the same time. So you're trying to make your neck, look up, keep that double chin, and then try to give yourself some
brace
height.
Your core.
Now while holding that position, I want you to pull your belly button into your spine at the same time. It's going to start to pull
your
forward a little bit.
Points.
There you go.
Yeah, we're stretching straight up.
So can you kind of feel a little bit of that space in this neck spine area that you're kind of creating, that down in the shoulders, up in the head, kind of, okay.
It does feel a lot different than, you know, anything I normally do.
Okay. So that's like, it's a real simple example. I'm not there to walk you through it because I could actually show you some better ones in person. That I wouldn't be able to do here virtually.
That'd be a good like every 10, 15 minute kind of drill to do at your desk.
Yes.
Though, you know, so that's great.
You could now, another way to do that would be even better would be to go up against the wall so that you could press that little nodule up against the wall while bringing your shoulder blades down, while tucking your belly button and trying to create that traction and that length. And if you hurt your trap and rhomboid again, that should alleviate some of the pain because it'll create some of the space and take some of the impingement off the nerve, which is what I think is happening.
This is zone one of MAPS Prime, which we're sending to you. So we're going to send that to you. That's zone one MAPS. And you could literally, like in a perfect world, if you're working from home on a desk, I've got you doing this every hour. Every hour you just kind of get up and do
30 seconds.
Yeah, literally 30 seconds worth of work. So it's not like a big thing you got to do. All you need is a flat wall. You don't need anything else. And you just go do that movement every hour or so. And you're just training yourself to feel what it's like to get in that position. And the wall is just a tool to give clients feedback so they know where they need to be positioned. If you practice this long enough, you'll get to a point where you know how to just, like Sal can tell you, get your, you know, depress the shoulders, elongate the neck, and you'll just be able to get yourself in that position because you've practiced it against the wall for a long time. And then that becomes a very valuable tool inside the gym when you're flying in planes, when you're driving your car, when you're down on the computer, you know how to get yourself in that spot.
Everybody else watching too, I coached through this on a free webinar, MAPS Prime webinar, with Doug, and took him to the wall and kind of showed him, you know, our compass test with that, our zone one test. So if you want to apply that and kind of have the same issues, you know, go there.
What's that under? MAPSPrimeWebinar.com?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Kyler, we're going to send that over to you.
Thank you guys so much. And thank you for MAPS Prime as well. I'll definitely go through that. I kind of thought that it might have been, you know, nerve related.
Yeah.
Just because it's so painful. And like the next day I can't lift my head. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's what it is. You got it, man.
Cool.
Awesome.
Keep us posted. Let us know how it's going, man.
Okay. Sounds good. Will do.
Thanks, brother.
All right.
You know who suffered from a really bad nerve issue from shrugs was Rich Gaspari, the bodybuilder. Yeah, he was heavy shrugs, and he impinged a nerve so bad that he lost feeling, and then it started atrophying things, and he had to really work through.
Wow.
Because when you shrug, you're lifting a bunch of weight, bringing the scapula up, and what happens a lot of times, your instinct is to bring your head back.
You could
down.
See that was his instinct. Even when he was describing it, he was doing that. His natural reaction is to look
and
up.
So he's got something going on there, and he's never got it imaged or whatever, but there's something going on, and if there's a herniated disc or whatever, there's a little bit of space, and that nerve is ready to be impinged, and then he does shrugs, and he brings his head back and does, and then boom, push on the nerve.
You also don't think that he could potentially have just kind of started to form his posture in that position, and that's actually what's causing
it. But it wouldn't cause that kind of pain, that repeated.
Not the posture, but that posture now puts him in a more compromised position when he does the exercise, it compresses So that potentially getting him in a better position posture-wise may actually just, if it's not an actual disc issue or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you love the show, check this out. Go to mindpumpfree.com. We have a free peptide guide. Peptides are some of the newest cutting-edge medical interventions to help you build muscle, burn body fat, get better sleep, improve your libido. They're not drugs. They're totally different. Go check out our free guide, mindpumpfree.com. You can also find us on Instagram. Justin is at mindpumpjustin. I'm at mindpumpmedia. And Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.